Chapter 47. Navan's Manor, Androvale. Tenny spent several pleasant days resting at Navan's country manor. Perfectly placed on the side of a gentle hill, the gardens of the well-proportioned estate bloomed with summer's abundance. Tenny's guest room window opened on a tranquil scene of rolling pastures. She particularly admired the vibrant, nearly lifelike tapestries in the great hall depicting historic themes. The Duchess mentioned with pride that she had not imported them from Cascada, but rather patronised the work of a local weaver. The Duchess's well-trained staff and Tenny's improved temper warded off any scenes like the ones in Gulltown. Tenny hated the guards, who watched her like vultures, but she managed to pointedly ignore their existence most of the time. She brought her attention back to Duchess Navan, who, as they sat in a rose garden sipping summer wine, wanted to unburden herself of her worries about her daughters.
"You don't have children, Lady Tenny. It is so hard these days to know what to tell them about colour."
"I'm not sure what you mean, Duchess."
"Well, my lord husband tells me we must not be snobbish, that brown hair is fine, that if one of our girls, you know, we have five we must see settled, has a brown-haired suitor, we should not discourage him."
Instinctively, her hand travelled up to her own head, where amber locks lay carefully and ostentatiously arranged on top of a darker brown layer.
"I've travelled a great deal, Duchess," said Tenny. "Let me assure you, colour has nothing to do with character. It is merely a quirk of the past."
"Yes, yes, so you say, so everyone says. And that to think otherwise is narrow and old-fashioned. But we're talking about marriage now, and the future of the Navan line. Tell me honestly, Tenny, don't the spirits favour old colour?"
"Do they?"
Tenny had to stop and think.
"They might, in some cases, such as our Queen. But then again, given the tragedy of so many old colour lines, recall how all of Eager's gold were massacred. We can't take this as axiomatic."
"My littlest girl once told me that brown colour comes from tisane, black teas and cocoa." "Isn't that adorable?" said the Duchess.
Tenny didn't usually find anecdotes about children amusing, but this brought a smile to her lips.
"So, did your daughter turn down her cocoa?"
"For a full week!"
They both laughed.
"But seriously, Lady Tenny, next you'll be uttering blasphemies," said the Duchess.
"Well," said Tenny, sipping from her glass, "who's to say the spirits have always been infallible or incapable of whim? No, really, I'm serious." She forestalled her companion's effort to object. "My own theory about old colour is that it was more or less a momentary fancy. It's been rich elites who have deliberately bred for old colours throughout the centuries as a mark of separation and distinction."
Again, she rushed on, this time to take the sting out of indirectly criticising her hostess.
"As for the amber colour in Weirendale, I suspect it didn't come from Nargis anyway. Our legends talk about the Queen's blue, but actually say nothing whatsoever about amber. I suspect that it derives from intermarriage between Eager Gold and Rotha Red, in which case you can hardly count it as a sign of Weir nobility."
"Ah," said Duchess Navan, sitting back in her chair. "I just realised something. You always wear a turban. Is that to cover your hair?"
"Mostly it's because I'm too impatient to sit through the fussing," Tenny admitted with a self-mocking smile. "But yes, I want people to talk to my face rather than be distracted by my colour." Tenny reached to lay her hand on top of Duchess Naven's. You should worry much more about whether the suitors demonstrate compatibility with your girls than about their hair. Tenny felt the Duchess shrink at this last statement, and the involuntary movement confirmed Tenny's private guess about the union between her host and hostess. Duke Naven, who had needed to attend to some estate concerns, joined them in the Rose Garden and told his wife all about their experiences searching for the Princella.
Oh, my dear, such a scene! Comic and tragic at the same time. The peacekeepers and the midwives rounded up any girl who could possibly fit our criteria. We had throngs of girls from 14 to 24, fat ones, skinny ones, pockmarked, no teeth, dairymaids, and some who smelt strongly of the barnyard. The country lasses acted so confused, fearful they had done something wrong, their parents half servile and half offended. I tell you, I felt a proper fool. Each girl had to have a private audience with Lady Tenny. How did you find them, Tenny?
Asked Duke Naven. Abashed, and you are being harsh on them in the main, dear Naven. Most were level-headed and quite lovely, if somewhat untutored. In fact, I had to be quite stern. Here she broke off and glared at the cascade of guards behind her with twitch and stare, that these pretty young women were not to be harassed by glance, word, or touch. The Duchess sighed.
But none of them turned out to be the Princella, enchanted and disguised.
No, no, of course not, said Naven. They were all Andrevale girls, seen there like all my days. So we have covered all the northern wards on this blasted, wasteful quest.
He stroked his moustache.
Today and the morrow, my dear, we will rest with you, refortify ourselves, so to speak, and then commence the hunt again in the middle wards.
Will you bring these hordes of girls and their outraged parents here, Lord Husband? They might trample my garden beds or chase the swans. They certainly would disturb my peace.
The Duchess's voice had taken on an aggrieved and nagging tone.
Oh, no. I plan to host only an initial meeting of the peacekeepers and midwives here. You know the peacekeepers already, respectable chaps all. We are not acquainted with all the goodies, but they do the hamlets great service.
"'Tis so," sighed the Duchess.
And then, perhaps regretting her first inhospitable response, she said,
"'I will make arrangements for a nice luncheon.' For them all, and little gifts such as bars of my lilac soap. The goodies and the peacekeepers could set a model of cleanliness for the villagers. We needn't raid the wine cellars, though, I do hope.
Forrest will set out cider and ale. Later, I will find a centrally located inn so we can conduct additional meetings without disturbing your household's peace.
Naven's glance at his wife was almost a glare.
I'll send Oris tomorrow to have a look-see as to which inns would be most accessible and most comfortable for Lady Tenny. The Winton Arms might work best. Willem is such a steady chap. Put a job in his hands and it's bound to go off well.